So yeah, it's good to be back. You might not want me to come back after today because I realized afterwards, like, yeah, I came and I talked to you guys all about fear and stuff last time, you'll never guess what I'm wanting to talk to you about today. So one of the interesting things that happened out of COVID and that we're now finding is still going on, sociologists have started to talk about there actually being a second pandemic. And you're like, really? I'm not really keen on that. But it's a very interesting thing in that it's not a disease in the strictest sense. It's a dis-ease. What they're talking about is a pandemic of anxiety. An anxiety pandemic. And whatever you thought of the vaccine, there's no vaccine for anxiety. And we're starting to see a lot of manifestations of that anxiety throughout, like psychologists and counselors are just going bunter at the moment. Great. If you're looking for a degree, we do. Tabor does have a counselling degree. You'll make a mint. The thing about it is that often I think when we think of anxiety, we think of anxiety as an individual's problem. Like, I have anxiety. You singular have anxiety. That kind of a thing. But one of the things that, there's a guy called Mark Sayers, who some of you may have heard of. He's a Melbourne pastor, theologian, genius dude. He wrote a book, I kid you not, he wrote a book in 2018 called Reappearing Church, where he predicted a pandemic would come in the next year or two. Just like it's a little throwaway line in this book, and you're like, seriously? Like, yeah. Well, he's written a new book, and his new book is called A Non-Anxious Presence. And one of his central arguments is that we're actually going through this pandemic of anxiety at the moment. And the reason is because of kind of the stuff that I talked about last time that I was here, which is that everyone was really freaked out during the pandemic. And everyone had to wrestle with fear. They might have been fear about a vaccine or not getting one or a disease or about, you know, politics or whatever. But everyone kind of went through a period of tremendous anxiety. People went through anxiety in isolation. People went through anxiety in all of these different things. And the thing about anxiety is it's a hell of a drug. Once you had it, you kind of find that even when the thing that made you anxious goes away, new anxieties emerge because you, to get all technical for a minute, your neural pathways, the habits of your mind, it becomes a habitual thing to run back to anxiety. Okay? But like I said, while we think of anxiety as often being an individual's problem, one of the things that Mark Sayers has been pointing out is that that's not how anxiety actually works. Anxiety is a systemic thing. It's a thing that happens in systems. It's a thing that happens with communities. It's a communal phenomenon. You know why? Because you know what drives you nuts? Other people. Because they're nuts. And you know why they're nuts? Because you drive them nuts. Okay? Right? Your workmates, they drive you nuts. Your boss drives you nuts. You know why your boss drives you nuts? Because you drive him nuts. Right? Your parents, they drive you nuts. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I get that, guys. You know what drives them nuts? You. Okay? Well, not you. Okay? You're awesome. But the rest of you, yeah. Okay? Right? Everyone drives each other nuts. And you know what, like your parents, you know, spend their time agonizing till 3 o'clock in the morning worrying about? You. Right? And you know what these kids or other people are worrying about, their schoolwork. And why are they worrying about that? Because it's a tense place. And you know what the teachers are worrying about? Their jobs and whether they're going to get these kids through. And like, it's, do you see what I mean? It's all interwoven. Okay? Now, you couple with that the amazing Australian propensity to deny that reality. A couple of weeks ago, we had Are You Okay Day, right? I think that's a great initiative. I just wish it was followed the day after with Fine Thanks Day. Yeah, I'm fine, thanks. Because most of us shield ourselves from that. Now, if that's bad enough as a wider Australian social tendency that we don't really know how to, we have this systemic contagion of anxiety, but we can't actually say that to anyone because we've got this stoic, nah, she'll be right, it'll be okay kind of a thing. That's even worse if you're a Christian. Because if you're a Christian, part of the whole shtick of being a Christian seems to have ended up being, oh no, I'm really okay because I've got Jesus and Jesus just makes everything peachy. And so I don't have any problems in my family. My family are just absolutely fantastic. That's why all of the oldies got here right on time or 10 minutes early and all of the parents got here 10, 15 minutes late because there's nothing wrong with your families. Of course there is. You're all screaming to your kids, get in the darn car within the next 2 minutes, but then you get here and then it's like, yes, they're sweet darlings. You know. I feel your pain, okay? But the point I'm making is we feel like that we have this obligation to not voice that anxiety. See, part of what's happened is that we have found ourselves in an era which I call an analgesic era, right? So analgesic is painkillers, your Panadols, your ibuprofens, your slightly heavier ones, your codeines, your morphines, your heroines, all the rest of it. We live in an analgesic society, and what that means is that we have come to a point where we can, a lot of the time, take the pain away to the point that we don't often know how to deal with pain, including mental health pain. And part of the thing is, as Christians, is that we've kind of bought into the wider society sense that, well, we're not going to actually, we're going to make it that the right thing is that we never have any tension, any worries, any stress, any pain, anything at all. Everything will be okay. And as Christians, one of the weirdest things that has happened is that we have come to the point where we have started to offer them Christianity as the best solution to that problem. So everyone else is out there saying, you can actually put painkillers over your pain. You can put antidepressants over your depression. You can put all of that kind of stuff. You don't have to face it. You don't have to deal with it. You don't have to worry about it. Just we'll make it all go away, and we'll make sure that you get the white picket fence and the two cars, and everything will be fine, and you won't have to worry. You won't have to face it. And then what we've done is we've said, you know what? Christianity has the best methods of you having that. You follow the rules of Christianity, everything's going to be fine. You're going to have the well-adjusted kids. You're going to have the not just the white picket fence, but the really nice brick house too. You'll have all of those wonderful things because Christianity will give you the formulas to make this work. It has the rules that will make it all work out great, and you won't have to feel any of this anxiety or pain or anything else. Now, that's really, really, really strange when you actually read the Bible at all. Because if you spend 10 minutes in the Bible, you're going to find out it is saturated in pain and anxiety. It just is. Look, do me a favor. Go back home. Not now, wait until I finish. But go back home, pull out that old Bible, you know, with the four columns, the paper one, right? Pull that out, and I want you to randomly pull open any of those pages. And I want you to see if you can't find on at least one of the four columns on any page of the Bible, anywhere. I want you to see if you can find four columns anywhere that do not have pain, anxiety, or dysfunction. Anywhere. Human pain, anxiety, or dysfunction on any of the four columns of any of the pages that you have in your Bible. I'm going to take a bet you're not going to have much luck. The Bible is saturated in pain and dysfunction. It confronts it, it faces it, it accepts that that's part of the reality of life. And so it's trying to therefore give us tools, not rules, but tools that can actually help us to manage and deal with that pain in the best way that we can, even in the midst of not necessarily being able to magically pop it away. So, to give you an example of that, I want to take you through a psalm. And the psalm is Psalm 77. If you want to, you can pull it up on your phone. I'm going to use the NIV, because that's what I have in front of me. And Now, before I do, let's remember that the psalms are frequently prayers. And so we're going to be reading through this one, which is a prayer. And one of the things I want to suggest is one of the key tools that the Bible gives us to deal with our anxiety is actually prayer. Now, you might hear in what I say a should. You should pray and it will make things better. I want you to avoid hearing me in that framework. I'm not interested in shoulds. I'm not interested in rules. I'm interested in strategies that might help. And some of what I say today might not work for you, and that's totally fine. I'm just throwing out to you some tools. And I'll tell you why, because they've helped me. They've helped me with my anxiety. Okay? Like, I'm the kind of guy who I've faced a lot of the anxiety that I'm talking about here. You know, I'm one of those guys who I'm in my late 40s, so I go to sleep okay, but then I wake up at around about 4 o'clock because I desperately need to go to the loo, right? All the men represent. And then what happens is that then I can't get back to sleep because the mind starts to churn. You know what I mean? So I've had to find ways to deal with my anxiety in the midst of that, and this has been one of the key ways that I have found. And it's not just there. Anxiety can pop up in all kinds of places. So what have I found? Well, I found prayer can be helpful. But it depends on what kind of prayer you're doing. So who's ever heard of that old acronym about prayer, ACTS? Who's heard ACTS? Yeah, nice. Right, so ACTS. So what was the A? Does anyone remember? Adoration. Nice. What's the next one? The C? Confession. We're Baptists. We don't like that one. But we'll put that in our pocket for the minute. T, Thanksgiving, thanks, good. And S, supplication, because we really wanted it to be R, but that doesn't work with the acronym, because what the heck is supplication? We wish it was R, because then it's requests, because that's really what it is. It's just asking for stuff, right? But actor doesn't really work. So here's what I'm going to suggest. When we want to pray through our anxiety, the most natural place where we think we would go is probably R. Bring your requests to the Lord with prayer and petition. Ask, 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 and everything will be, you'll feel much better. Well, let's listen to Psalm 77 and see what they think works. For the director of music for Jeduthun, of Asaph, a psalm. I cried out to God for help. I cried out to God to hear me. When I was in distress, I sought the Lord. At night, I stretched out untiring hands, and I would not be comforted. That is not how you figured that stanza would go when you started reading it, was it? I stretched out my untiring hands. I talked to him and everything like that. I would not be comforted. I would not be comforted. Huh. Keep on going. I remembered you, God, and I groaned. I meditated, and my spirit grew faint. You kept my eyes from closing. I was too troubled to speak. I thought about the former days, the years of long ago. I remembered my songs in the night. My heart meditated, and my spirit asked, "Will the Lord reject me forever? Will he never show his favor again? Has his unfailing love vanished forever? Has his promise failed for all time? Has God forgotten to be merciful? Has he in anger withheld his compassion?" Now, that is not how you probably expected this to go, but it's there. That's what it says. What I find is how interesting this is psychologically. What you think would happen is that you would go to God, you're really stressed out, you're really worried, and you'd say, "God, I'm really worried about this, this, and this, and this. Can you fix it? Can you fix it?" And that would make you feel better. Here's the thing I've learned about worry and anxiety. Okay? Prayer, when it's the requesty, supplication-y one, is what I call, for me, sanctified worry. What I mean is, it's the exact same conversation, I've just turned it to God instead, but it's the exact same conversation. So before I was like talking to God, what I would do is I'd worry. And so I'd say, "I'm really worried about such and such, and I'm really worried about things, and I don't know what we're going to do with this. Maybe if I try this, it might work. And if I talk to so-and-so, but I've tried talking to so-and-so, and they're a jerk, and I don't like that, and I wish if I could..." And then I go, "Oh, right, so I'm anxious now. I know what I'll do. I'll pray, and I'll take all of this to the Lord, and I'll feel so much better." So then what do? "Dear God, I'm really worried about so-and-so, and dear God, I'm really worried about so-and-so, and so-and-so's such a jerk, and if I could talk to them about this, but God, I don't think that..." Do you see how all I've done is I've kept the exact same conversation going, but now all I've done is I've put God in there? So I'm still actually worrying. The patterns of thinking have not changed at all. They are the exact same patterns. But somehow I figure that if I throw to him the same solutions that I've been trying to figure out in my brain and tell him to do it, it'll work. "I'm really worried about so-and-so. If I could just talk to him like this, but it doesn't work, so you fix it. Go on, you fix it." And the thing is, a lot of the time, God, clearly because he's a jerk, doesn't fix it the way that I want him to fix it. What a jerk. It's almost why he might get to the point where the guy goes, "Will the Lord reject me forever? Will he never show his favor again?" This is a guy who's gone to God with all of the solutions that weren't working already, told God to put those solutions into place, fix his problems, and God's saying, "I'm not really down with that at the moment. I'm going to take you a different way." And he's like, "I'm not really happy with that, so you must be a complete and utter jerk. Will the Lord reject me forever? Will he never show his favor again? Has his unfailing love vanished forever? Has his promise failed for all time? Has God forgotten to be merciful? Has he in anger withheld his compassion?" Like, he's an angry, mean, nasty God now. What a lot of mean words. All right? Okay? What I particularly find fascinating about this particular thing is, has his unfailing love vanished forever? Has his promise failed for all time? That's got a certain permanent ring to it, don't you think? Right? Here's the thing. Do you know humans are the only creatures that have the capacity to think about the future? And we have this amazing ability to say, whatever is my current situation, That is the future now. Right? Okay? Collingwood won a grand final. That is our future now. They will always be winning grand finals now, and my life is just going down the toilet like that. You know, that kind of a thing. We live in a world where what we do is we ascribe temporary realities as if they're going to be like that forever, because we can't feel our way out of it. And that's what anxiety does to you. Now, you might think, well, that's very naughty of that person. Okay? That's very naughty of that person. That's not a good Christian. Well, here's the thing. The guy who wrote that is a guy called Asaph, and he's written quite a lot of these psalms. And the other thing is, this is the Old Testament's, like, this is the Old Testament Jewish worship manual. Okay? And it's their top 150 of all time songs. That seems pretty amazing to me that this got in. That's got to tell you something. That's got to tell you that it's actually okay to say this stuff. That God has no problem with this. One of the things Melinda Cousins, our illustrious leader here in the Baptist, one of the things, Melinda's an expert in the Psalms. And one of her key points is that the amazing thing about the Psalms is they are the genuine words of real people who worshipped Yahweh. But they are also Yahweh's words. Right? It's the word of God, right? So that must mean that God has no problem with people actually coming to him and telling him, Lord, I think you've rejected me forever. Lord, I don't think you'll ever show me your favor again. God actually has no problem with you doing that. Isn't that fascinating? Isn't it fascinating that we have a God who has so much self-assurance, is so secure in himself that he doesn't feel insecure and hurt when you just tell him you're really upset? I once heard a person at a conference on worship say, the amazing thing about the Psalms is they give us the permission to tell God our lies honestly. Say that again. The amazing thing about the Psalms is they give us permission to tell God our lies honestly. What did she mean? What she meant was all of us have lies that we tell ourselves, and particularly in times of anxiety. All of us have things that we say that aren't true and that are actually kind of toxic. The amazing thing about the Psalms is the Psalms give us permission repeatedly to actually tell God our anxieties and our toxic lies that we've been telling ourselves, and to therefore say, God, I think you're like this. I think you're like that. I think you're letting me down like this. I'm really angry at you because of this. I think you don't care about me. I think... And he actually is a big boy, and he can take us punching him like a punching bag like that. So actually, when I say prayer is part of the way that we will do this and deal with our anxiety, part of that is you've got to let it out somewhere. You've got to get those anxieties out. And so on one level, being able to honestly tell God your concerns and your anxieties, not just about the world out there or about yourself or about your family or about your work or about anything else, but actually your anxieties about him. Your anxieties about him. He has no problem with you doing that at all. In fact, it's like he wants you to, because he thinks, not that it's a rule, but because it's a strategy, it's a tool that will help. But the thing is, you can't stay there. You've got to find something else that will help. And so what is it? Then I thought, to this I will appeal. I'll appeal to the years when the Most High stretched out his right hand. I'll remember the deeds of the Lord. Yeah, I'll remember your miracles of long ago. I'll consider all your works and meditate on all your mighty deeds. Your ways, God, are holy. What God is as great as our God? You're the God who performs miracles, and you display your power among the peoples. With your mighty arm, you redeemed your people, the descendants of Jacob and Joseph. The waters saw you, God. The waters saw you and writhed. The very depths were convulsed. The clouds poured down water. The heavens resounded with thunder, and your arrows flashed back and forth. Your thunder was heard in the whirlwind. Your lightning lit up the world. The earth trembled and quaked. Your path led through the sea, your way through the mighty waters, though your footprints were not seen, and you led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. And then it stops. So if I was telling you before, let's place a bet. Which of Acts do you think is going to be the most helpful? I'm going to tell you, like, you're Baptist, so you wouldn't have gambled because you're good Christians. But, like, if you were going to gamble, you would probably have gambled not on A. You wouldn't have thought A would be where you would need to go to actually make yourself feel better. And yet, that's exactly where this guy has run. He's actually run to A. He's run to, I need to stop myself thinking about myself. I have to stop myself thinking about my problems. Not because it's selfish to do so, not because it's naughty of me to worry about those things, not because it's bad that I'm being like, no, it's just not helpful. It's not helping me get better. What will help me get better? What will help me get better is to look at who God is. Now, should I spend time looking at God and telling him how awesome he is? Yes. Is that why I'm doing it? No, because it's not about shoulds. It's not about rules. It's not about doing the right thing. It's about what helps. And what will help me right now is to spend some time looking at God and thinking about how powerful and good and kind and strong and for me he has always been. Now, we have the added bonus of Jesus. This guy didn't have that, but we got that as part of our evidence for that. And it's framing things within a focus where you shift the focus to the fact that God has given you ample evidence that he can solve your problems, that he can work within your problems even if he doesn't solve them. And that you have a hope that is strong and secure. Now, the other thing for us as Baptists that is a real great thing that we do, but in this case is actually a problem, is that we're not great with liturgy. Okay, we love to kind of make things up as we go along, or at least tell ourselves that we do. Okay, but part of what I want you to realize about the Psalms is they are a liturgy. If we went and spent time with, you know, the Lutherans down the road, bless them, they got their liturgy. And often we're concerned that what would happen if we did do liturgy is that we would get to the point where we would fake it, kind of roll with it and everything like that. The advantage of a liturgy is that it gives you the permission to let it do some of the heavy lifting for you when you can't do it yourself. Okay? So I would not have the words when I'm in the midst of an anxiety fit to say all this nice stuff to God. I just wouldn't. If you would, awesome. If you wouldn't, what do? You use a liturgy that does the heavy lifting of saying all this nice stuff for you, and you get carried along with it. Now, fortunately, we have a thing called Spotify, right? And it has all manner of playlists with uplifting Christian songs that you can listen to and to find your way of adoring God when everything is going rough. Okay? And so for your mental health, actually engaging with music that is uplifting and encouraging is going to help you a lot. So, for your mental health, and because you should, because he deserves it, you should spend time. No, it will help you to spend some time shifting your focus to God and the power of who he is and adoring him in it. Because you know what? Once you actually realize how much he's on your side and how much he's loving you and how powerful he is, that's going to make you feel better. Now, I could also talk about Thanksgiving, but I want to finish by talking about confession. Because if you actually look back at the beginning, this guy's admitted that he's done some very naughty things. He said some very naughty things to God. And the point that I want to make is that that's actually okay, like I said before. But I want to hit you with the reality that we don't confess very well in our culture, particularly as Christians and as Baptists. But confession is actually a great anxiety reliever. Again, I'm not telling you you should. I'm telling you this will help. And the other thing to realize is none of these are sung individually. They are sung as the whole community of Israel, which tells you that people felt safe to be able to talk about their junk with each other. They found people that they could support and talk honestly about, I'm angry, I'm worried, I'm scared, I don't know what will happen if this happens. And so what I want you to realize is, just as I said, that anxiety is a communal, systemic phenomenon, the ways out of that anxiety are also a communal systemic phenomenon. The way you're going to get out of it is by doing things together with other people. And that includes being honest about not only when you're angry with God, but when you're angry at your kids, and when you're angry at your boss, and when you're angry at your parents, and when you're angry at it, and when you're scared, and when you're full of anxiety, to talk that out with people. And to hear them say to you what it's so important to hear from other people, you're forgiven. It's okay. God forgives you. God still loves you. So they're my quick tips from this passage on how we're going to get through this time of the pandemic of anxiety. If you want to talk to God and bring your worries before him, there's plenty of Bible passages, including Psalms, that I could point to that works. But if it's not working for you, if you're falling into sanctified worry and just doing the same worrying you were doing before but calling God into it, if you're angry, then maybe migrating to honestly talking to him about where you're upset about it, and then migrating to adoration, and then finishing with a sense of communal confession with those that you trust who are Christians among you, that might be a great way to go in the midst of what we're going all through. Thanks.